streets, look at us in action. Have my radio playing on my rock and roll station. Saw three hot ladies down by the square. I said, jump in, girls, let's go party somewhere.
Crank it out, blow it out, rip it out, let's party now. Crank it out, blow it out, rip it out, party now.
What's going on, everybody? My name is Larry Francis, but you know me better on Instagram as A Wrestling Historian. And today on To Be Determined, I have my guest with me, former NWA and TNA Tag Team Champion, Sean Hernandez. How you doing today, sir?
That's not a problem, you know. We're just trying to do our thing. That's all. Just in wrestling, and you'll make some money, that's it.
Could you give us an abridged version of your life story before you got in the business?
For 30 years, and so we moved around a lot, and played high school football and college football and 2 years in arena football, and did a little bit of powerlifting before that, and I didn't want to get a real job, so BF at the time came to, saw my side, got the chance to try to be a wrestler, and that was pretty much how I did that following month with his son Jazz from the old Global Age in the army.
Who got you into the WWF during your stint there?
I was with NWA, the Southwest version, which was in Dallas at the time. Ken Taylor, the promoter, he had the local hookups for Texas as far as getting guys tryouts and stuff like that. And that's how I got my tryout. My first tryout, it was myself, Necro Butcher, tried out for WWF at the time. Like 2002.
Who'd you work with while you're in WWF?
Yeah, I was with I was very, very blessed to be in the ring with Crash Holly. That was my first dark match I ever had. Didn't have no idea what I'm doing there, but he led me to the match, and it was positive from some of the backstage guys, and they kept using me, so it was pretty cool. This was probably, I've only had like a year or two wrestling in my belt, so there's no way I should have been in that spot. So I was very, very blessed. Crash was very patient. Let me do some things to get noticed. That was pretty cool.
Were you a wrestling fan growing up?
Oh, of course. We lived in North Carolina, and so George Championship Wrestling was my thing. Ric Flair was the man, Mad Superstar, Mr. Wrestling number two. And then moving to Texas, we was right in the backyard of Paul Bosch. First time I could see Junkyard Dog, the Guerreros, the Fantastics, Dr. Death. It was phenomenal.
Would it be fair to say that Ric Flair was the guy that got you become a professional wrestler?
Everybody wanted to be Ric Flair. Everyone. I mean, when I live in North Carolina, every person watched wrestling. They watched baseball, basketball, all the sports, but everybody knew who Ric Flair was, and they wanted to be Ric Flair. And of course, I'm not too delusional. No, not Hispanic guy, but I mean, everybody wanted to be the blonde hair guy with all the girls, all the money, and cheating away, and still coming out with his limousines. It was awesome. Nobody, of course, when being from my Latin background, you didn't think that could happen to you, because you don't see a lot of us Latins on television in the 80s.
Did you watch WWF at all, or are you more of an NWA guy?
Really, at NWA, because when we had cable, it was regional, so it's whatever region you lived in. So we watched a little bit of, Paul Bosch was in Houston. We lived in North Carolina for probably 10 years, so obviously, George Championship Wrestling with Gordon Sully.
How long were you with WWF for?
I just did dark matches for him. That's it. I was doing darts, and then I wanted to do my own thing. I wanted, I was very fortunate. I got to do some dark matches and do a couple tours from my 2001 to 2004 in all Japan. And the legendary Dr. Dusty Williams got me that spot. So you're in the ring with Dr. Death, knowing you have no reason you should be there. Actually, it was phenomenal. I mean, this now are getting pushed on. And I remember wrestling all Japan with Dr. Death and guys like that. And the clothes right off the top rope. It was just a very different time back then.
What led to you joining NWA?
Just the opportunity because, you know, guys go to Japan, guys go to Mexico, it's worldwide. It's just, it's what you grew up. You know, as far as the WWF, it's more glamorized, more money. But, I mean, back then, your knowledge is limited. You don't see wrestling for the championship belt. You don't see guys going to England or different countries. And that's what really got me into going wrestling in Japan and wrestling in Mexico and stuff like that. It's just getting to see the world.
So when you were with NWA, is that how it transferred to you joining TNA?
Yes, I did a match with at one of the anniversary shows against Ron Killings, and that's right when TNA was fixing, starting up. And you would drive from Texas to Nashville to do your tryout for TNA, and that's what we would do. It was for maybe 12 hours, just for a 5-minute match, hoping that you can get seen, but it was for us here. Less than four or 5 years in the business, it was worth it. Now we see guys wrestling, they won't drive 1-4 hours. I just don't understand. Back then, I guess now you, with all the exposure with social media, the internet, you can see different performers. But back when I was early 2000s, you're a historian, it was the magazines, it was stuff like that. So, I mean, Just to get your name out there, you actually have to drive to these places. I remember when I was going to Ring of Honor, I first met Homicide. He's in the main event at Ring of Honor. It's like 2002 or 2003, and I'm in the pre-show matches, just trying to get my name out there. It was a weird drive from Texas all the way to New York just for a trial match. I don't see a lot of guys these days that would been willing to do that. So it was a different time, way different time back then.
You made your TNA debut on Explosion against Shane Douglas. What was that like?
I don't remember much, but I guess it was such a blur, but those guys back then, they pretty much called in the ring, and that's how it went down. And I had a match with him. I probably had about 4 or 5 dark matches with TNA before they called me to do the Elite Guard, which was a doppelganger group of Road Dogg, Conan, and Mark Kelly. So it was weird, but it was an awesome experience.
Did you enjoy your time being in the Elite Guard?
Well, no, you're learning on the fly. You're learning the business, just like in all Japan. When you're an independent scene, you guys, you're calling stuff in the back, we're doing this, we're going to do that, we're going to do this. And then here you are with, like I said, Shane Douglas, or we wrestled, it was like AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy versus me and one of the Elite Guard guys. And they're telling us what we get to do in the match. It's definitely more humbling. It's totally still an old guard where the veterans are calling the shots. Now, I guess these guys think they're going to do all these moves and it's okay and it's good. But back then, asking if you can do a body slam, if you can do a normal suplex, let alone not know 450 or moonsault or nothing like that, no. You're just asking for basic moves in the early 2000s. Now, I went back to Impact, it's a totally different thing.
What was your experience working for Jeff Jarrett?
Jeff knew how to put people in the right spots to get the crowd into it. You never think that a guy from Nashville would know how to get these Hispanic guys to where the people are invested in interest. A lot of people don't realize the LAX thing was the brainchild of Jeff and Dutch Mantel. So there's two white guys from the South making the hardest Latin group with my opinion, for a long time, ever, at least at the time. And you see what they look like. They have, there's no Latin in them at all. They knew how to get the crowd exactly how they want.
So I see you teamed up with Jared and Ken Shamrock to take on Dusty Rhodes, Larry Sabisco, and 3D Live Crew. That had to be something special for you to work with all these legends.
It was a blur, because I mean, you're a kid, even though I'm a big kid, but I'm a kid, and I remember guys that I've been watching on TV for at least half my life, and it was this overwhelming for myself. I mean, not only were these wrestlers, these are legends. So Dusty Rhodes, legend. Larry Sabisco, AWA, legend. And these guys are literally in your match. And it was, I'm used to working with guys that make on the independent scene where we're wrestling the bingo hall for like $50. And so I'm wrestling in a match on television with Dusty Rhodes, with Sabisco, with guys like that. It was just, the most thing I said is overwhelming. It was awesome.
I'm still shocked just realizing that here you are watching NWA growing up, you see the American Dream, and then next thing you know you're in the ring with this guy. That just blows my mind.
But it still blows my mind. It happened to me. Wrestling was definitely different back then. I've had some good matches and some bad matches, and matches that I like to forget. And as long as I like to remember that the bell rings, the crowd's into it, and here you are. I can't believe I'm gonna lock up with Dusty Rhodes. I can't believe I'm going to do a move to Larry's Bisc. I can't believe, it's the little kid comes down really quick.
What was the most important thing that Dusty Rhodes taught you?
Do your gimmick. Don't try to be nobody you're not. That's what I definitely remember from that man.
So not too long after that match, the Elite Guard was released from TNA. What was the reason for that?
One of the members decided to take a release tour and did not notify anyone. Made the bad call to dissolve the whole group. And it's always stuck with me, you know, so I've always been in a tag and stuff like this, so I always make sure when I'm with my partner, it costs both of our jobs, so let's keep this going, make this money, because that's one thing I do know, like, about the tag division is, if one screws up, I'm both guys, and you've seen it time and time again over the years, how that happens.
How'd you return to TNA?
It was LAX. They had at the time was Apollo, Conan, and Homicide. Apollo was having problems making his flights from Puerto Rico to Orlando, and they needed a big Hispanic guy, obviously, for the group. And I was in Mexico doing this with a mask on, busting Mr. Texas, and they called Bill Barons, and he found the emails to get me, because at that time, in Mexico, it's hard to get hold of somebody. And I told him no, because I was making decent money down there and everything was going good. I said, well, then they called me back in, this was in January of 06, and they called me back in March. Hey man, can you just come try it for a little bit? Because I guess whatever guy that they had plug in after Apollo wasn't working out. And I don't know why I said yes, but I said yes, and it worked out. Look what happened.
And then when you got paired up with Homicide, did you have any idea that you and him would just hit it off and just become the big tag team that you did?
Not even close. I mean, I knew Homicide from Ring of Honor. He was one of the biggest stars there. And, you know, I was just a pre-match guy just trying to catch my break in Ring of Honor. You know, it was kind of difficult. You got this guy who has a nice rep, not paired with me, who he doesn't know very well. I just put all my trust in him. I said, look, Homicide, we're going to do these matches exactly how you want to do them. Just plug me in the right spots, because with the psychology of Mexico that I was doing, which is not very good compared to the American style wrestling, If he didn't help me and Mitchell me, there would be no LAX. We would be done after the first month. Good, bad, or ugly, he's the reason why LAX was successful.
What do you think it worked out so well?
Homicide, he knows how to put everyone in the right spots with the brings in a problem. Had nothing but positive things. I mean, he's a friend, a brother, mentor, everything. I mean, this guy could do it all. Yeah, people say, if you've ever saw him have a singles match, yes, everyone knows he's a smaller stature, but his aura, his character, he makes himself 6'2", 220, very easy, where he's nowhere near that. But I mean, this is aura, the way he knows, and his psychology, everything is just on point.
I think another thing that worked out so well for LAX is, aside from WCW with the Cruiserweight division and, of course, the Guerreros, there wasn't really too many Latino wrestlers, so I think you guys stuck out because you had that heritage.
Oh, most definitely. Here you have a legend in Conan speak on the mic for us, and then you have myself, and you have Homicide. We look like we're legit just walked in from the south side of any Latino neighborhood. Of course, we're going to get the spotlight looking at you right off the bat. So, if you're not a good boss or not, you're fixing to find out right now. And it worked out really well for us because, I mean, we were sitting on the corner guarding the so-called Spanish announce table from March to July of 06. And I just knew we were going to get fired because they weren't doing nothing with us. We were rarely have matches, and then I think finally Ron Killings and Sunday Dutt needed a pay-per-view match. They didn't want to put them against each other because they're baby faces, and they gave us a shot. Just put it in, threw us together in a match, and the rest is history. I mean, we knew that this is our only shot to get these people to see what we could do, because then we were, like I said, management sees these Hispanic dudes eating their food and paying these guys to stay. And of course, we're paranoid. We're going to get let go. And one more match and for the August pay-per-view. And we just said to ourselves, we're going to do everything we can to make this so they don't fire us. And then we thought from August to December, we'd be with the hottest tag team on the wrestling at the time.
You spent your career being Sean Hernandez, Super Max, Cholo. How much gangster are you in real life?
Well, I live on the north side. with my dad being a Green Beret for 30 years, and yes, sir, no, ma'am, yes, ma'am. I have to have your hair at a certain length all the time. Can get lower than the C's in school, or you get beat. I think my last discipline my dad gave me was the day I signed my scholarship for football. This was, I was 18 years old, so I got beat regularly. So any chance of screwing up, it was not happening. So, I mean, it was definitely all character. I love it. Homicide, he's that 1,000% OG real deal. But I mean, as far as me being the gangster thug, no, that's not me.
When you're out there doing your thing, like, I totally believe that, you're like this gangster. So, how much influence did you have to put into that? Did you watch any movies, or did you get everything from Homicide?
You gotta realize that, my father was an Army soldier, was a Green Beret for 30 years, but his family's not. So my cousins and uncles, on my dad's side, strict Puerto Ricans living in Patterson, New Jersey. My mom's side of the family, Mexican American. So it's just because I personally, could live this, because my dad would probably beat me. It happened all around me. So, I mean, it wasn't that difficult and that much of a stress to figure out how to be a thug.
Because I would see you doing your thing on TV. I'm like, holy shit, is this dude from MS-13 or what? You know, like, it was such a convincing performance.
Oh, man. You have no idea. My little whistle. Yeah, that's my uncle's right there. I don't know how PG your show is, but I mean, it doesn't mean that's something nice. It's how every Mexican knows what that whistle means I do on television. And it's been still in my brain from like 6 years old on. You know, that whistle can mean let's fight, let's party, hey, what's up? You know, but it's, you know, I learned that before I learned the N-word in Spanish, actually, my uncles and cousins, yeah, that's not a problem, could be around them.
And then you had your big moment when you defeated AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels to win the tag team titles. What was that like?
It was awesome. I mean, that was the Suicide Steel match, and yeah, two of the better wrestlers at the time in TNA, and I'm thinking every time I'm wrestling there, don't be the weak link, don't be the guy who makes the match horrible. And the chemistry was good, and especially with Conan doing the promos and Conan with the outside interference, it was magical. Because I mean, even though we're the heel, people enjoyed us winning those tag titles.
And that's one thing I really enjoyed about TNA was you guys were in a really strong tag team division. It was you guys, the Dudley Boys, America's Most Wanted.
Machine Guns. I mean, it was definitely, I think, the strongest tag team division I've ever been in, because, I mean, anybody could have been a champion and nobody could have said no, why them.
Who'd you have the best chemistry with working all those tag team matches?
Anybody. I mean, Robert Roode had the best footwork I've ever seen, be heavyweight guy ever. I mean, he's always in the right spot, the right time. Timing was always perfect. It was crazy to have this guy took so long to be a superstar, because, I mean, everyone knew he had it. Like, just on his ring skill and his psychology. I really like being in the ring with him. I like being in the ring with AJ, obviously. Those were two of the best guys I've been in the ring with, besides Kurt Angle and Sting. I mean, on the tag division, those guys were phenomenal.
There was a point where Conan ended up leaving TNA. Do you remember what the reason was behind that?
It was having problems with the direction of how he wanted LAX to go, and he had another offer with AAA to be the head guy there, so you know, like how things are going for yourself and TNA, and you're a legend in Mexico, and now you're talent coordinator / everything at AAA. Why wouldn't you take that job? So, I mean, that's pretty much how pulled out, because, I mean, Elliot Max is doing well, and then they started putting some matches where, it didn't make sense in Conan's mind, where they're putting, like, I remember one time we had a match, LAX versus Rhino and Low Key, and they go over, and of course that was the straw that broke the camel's back, because Conan didn't see the rhyme or reason why two unestablished guys who are not tagging and probably are never going to tag are going to be an established tag team that were already the champions.
Was it hard for you and Homicide to go on without Conan, or did you just press forward?
Awkward, because when Conan left, Conan is a great speaker, and we rarely spoke on the mic. Why would we? We had one of the best speakers speaking for us. So when he left, we had big shoes to fill to try to get a mic guy, and obviously the teenagers have confidence in us talking on the mic, so they gave us Hedge of Grill, gave us Salinas, and we had good matches until they could figure out what they wanted to do.
Did you like those pairings at all, or just didn't work?
It's so different when you have Latin mouthpieces on the side to go to Shelly Martinez. That was awesome. But, I mean, his vision of what he wanted LAX to be is different. He wanted it to be a lot more positive, and he wanted to break away from that stereotype. So it was very different. And the message was awesome, but it's the way what the company wanted to do with LAX is way different.
And then at Hard Justice 2008, you guys dropped the titles to Beer Money.
They were on fire at the time. Remember Beer Money? They had the slogan, they're coming out on the scooter. We're just going out there and with some generic promo that's given to Hector. So, I mean, the LAX cool factor definitely went down a lot.
After that, they split up you and Homicide. Was it difficult for you to transition to singles competition?
Of course, because, I mean, we didn't want to break up. We knew we still had things to do that we could bring to the tag division. And we have different chemistry than most tags, you know, where we have a big guy, little guy. So why would you have us turn each other? That was awkward for us. You know, here we are, bonded brothers all the time. And all of a sudden, you have Homicide turn me, and so he can be a heel in the League World Team or whatever they put him with Eric Young, and then have me try to do singles. It just didn't work at all.
You felt more comfortable as a tag team guy?
Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed singles. It was awesome. I mean, once Jim Cornette quit, Flash got fired, I don't know exactly what it was. But yeah, once he was let go, that was the end of the Hernandez push for singles, because he was the guy who did all my agents. And I think that was the last time that I ever got singles push in TNIAO. That they decided to make different versions of LAX. It did not work out, obviously, with the Mexican America and stuff like that. All because of, you know, Cornette and Russo not getting along.
You won the Feast or Fire briefcase, which was TNA's version of Money in the Bank. Who broke the news to you that you were going to get a world title shot against Sting?
Dick Stitch. Dixie herself. Yeah, well, it was pretty cool. But, obviously, something went wrong because the way they booked it, have you ever seen someone have get a world title shot with a, you know, with a Money Bank or Feast of Fire, whatever you want to call that? And all of a sudden they, almost like they do a do-over because they realize they booked it wrong the first time. I guess I got lost, or I got DQ'd on the match, or the match didn't start yet. I forgot how they worded it. And then you, so I get the suitcase back only to go for a smaller belt. Which makes no sense. It specifically is for the heavyweight belt, so why would you have me go against Eric Young and Kevin Nash for the TV title or whatever it was? There's just a lot of things in TNA at that time didn't make sense. So you just go for the flow, and, you know, you're getting paid well, so just what can you do? You know, you guys try to make the best of whatever they throw at you.
You had to take some time off to recover from a neck injury. Was that years of wear and tear, or was that something that happened in the ring?
January of 2009, I had a match with Sting, and that's when the finish was a DQ with our, the, what's it called, that group called Walter, like Kurt Angle and Booker T, all those guys were in that other group.
Oh, the main event mafia?
I got beat down. And I got thrown in the corner. Scott Steiner looked me over. And he just came back from my knee surgery, I think. And he was about 285, 290. He was chucking over his head. And I felt the flash. And I landed right on top of my head. And I broke my neck. About C4 and C5 were broken. And it was pretty difficult during that time because, you know, you can't really tell what happens when your neck breaks right off the bat. I mean, when your C4 and C5 pinch in your spine, but your, myself, it actually my tricep. So I went from doing dumbbells to 160 pounds each hand to my weak hand was my right arm, so it hurts. I was probably doing a 60 pound dumbbell. And these guys, were still, you're telling people there's something wrong with your with my arm. But they just had me go out there anyway. And I finally got an MRI on my own just with the end of April. And I told you my neck's broke. And sure enough, I was taking up TV after that pay-per-view. So I still wrestled one more time with the broken neck, with the paperwork in their hand. Which is awkward, you know. And they went after the pay-per-view was over. And told me a TV that they can't use me anymore if I fix my neck.
You broke your neck 10 years ago, you got the surgery, you recovered, you got back in the ring, you're still wrestling, it's just amazing. How do you keep going?
Well, I lucked out. I mean, I had one of the best surgeons in Houston. Dr. Moran, he took care of me really well. And he told me, he said, I used to lift really, really, really heavy as possible, for pounds to work out. And he just told me, if you want to wrestle and keep wrestling, you have a choice. You can either lift those weights for free, or you can work on totally change your whole workout routine and just do body weights, and you can wrestle and make money. You can't do both, because when you have they fuse my neck together, you can't put all that heavy weight on your neck after that. It's not going to happen. You're just gonna keep aggravating and having to get it redone. So basically from 2010 to now, which is what, 2019, I probably went to the gym to lift weights probably 5 times, maybe 6. You know, I use most of the body weights, dips, pull ups, push ups, you know, basically like a prison workout with no weights at all since 2010.
After you got your neck surgery, how long did it take you to recover to get back in the ring?
It usually takes 6 to 9 months. You know, that's what the recommended thing on that. But you think of a carrot, oh man, when you get this big singles push. Oh, brother, I was back wrestling in 2 months. I had my surgery in May 1st of 2009, and I was wrestling by mid-July. Doing TNA house shows and stuff. Believing that they're going to give me the big singles push. That's why they gave me the briefcase back and stuff. So all you up-and-coming wrestlers, if you get hurt in big promotions, take all that time off. I promise you, because I mean, my first TV match, when I came back, not counting this ring rust, they put me in a ring with Samoa Joe, my first match back. In that one spot where he comes in the corner and gives you that roundhouse kick. Remember, I had neck fusion, so it was probably 10 to 12 weeks old. It felt like my whole spine fell on the ground. He hit by Joe Wood. It was crazy. I was overthinking. Maybe I should not have came back so quick, but you have so many management people telling you, oh man, we got to bring you this push. You'll be a champion. This and that. Of course, you're gonna fall for it, hook, line, and sinker. And then, of course, happen if that fusion would have fell out of place or something like that. Then I'd have the game even longer.
Did you have trouble wrestling again, or was it like a bicycle picking up where you left off?
I didn't think nothing of it until Joe kicked me. I go, oh, maybe I need to think about this. But it was nothing different. It was just more confidence that, you know, every time you take a bump, you're not going to let it make your neck break. The neck fusion at all. I remember the harder matches I would have, I would take this butt, but it dropped to my neck. I would immediately go home and make an MRI appointment just to make sure my neck fusion was in the right place. I probably had about 3 or 4 times. After that, you know, I got more comfortable and it worked out better.
One of my favorite examples of bad TNA storylines is you come back, you reunite with Homicide, and then a couple months later, he turns on you. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, why'd the creative team even bother?
Oh, we were hot. We were hot. I mean, come on. It doesn't make any sense. That's the best you can come up with on. Because you wanted to separate us, which was weird. You had the crowd behind us because we were cool. We were gangsters. We were, you know, thug guys. And then if you know us, when they were grooming me to be a singles guy, all of a sudden I'm wearing trunks and I have different music and different, you know, it was just a whole different thing on what they wanted. And it was weird. I mean, why would you keep me the same music, the same vibe, the same crowd energy, and you have me coming out to a slower riff with different trunks on? I mean, they're like normal wrestling trunks. And I said, I wasn't feeling it at all, and it didn't work out.
After they broke up you and Homicide, they had you tagging with Matt Morgan instead, so that left me a little confused. I'm like, okay, that's random.
Whether you're a Vince Russo guy or a Cornette guy or in between, it doesn't matter. I think both guys are great guys. I feel that Vince Russo decided in July in the sand, okay, we told the office, it's me or Cornette, and he was the head writer of it, and you know, Cornette is not going to bow down to no man. And he left. And everyone knows that Matt Morgan was Cornette's protege. And everyone knew at the time that Jim Cornette was managing and aging all my matches. So what better way to kill two birds with one stone than to have us both being tag guys? And then you don't have to worry about us at all. You don't have to push neither guy. And I really think that's what happened.
What was your experience working with Matt Morgan? Because now you have a different dance partner.
It was cool. I mean, Matt's a cool guy. But I mean, when you have two power guys and babyface, and someone's got to sell. Someone's got to sell. Unless you go to book, it's like the Road Warriors. Someone has to sell. And they wanted to give me the push first, I think, for the singles push. So that had to take the heat of matches. So you have a 7 foot, 300 pound monster taking the heat, waiting for my hot tag. That doesn't make any sense. They did not think about it very well on how they booked this. You've seen the matches, I mean, we're having 5-6 minute matches, we're throwing guys around, then all of a sudden Matt misses something, and they work on his leg a little bit, and then all of a sudden they tag me with a hot tag, and we kill him. This makes you want to shake your head looking back at that time.
It's pretty crazy looking back and knowing now that your tag team partner would become a future mayor.
That is awesome. The biggest BoJack mayor you've ever seen, right?
Yeah, do you still talk to him?
I haven't talked to Matt in maybe 2 or 3 years. I had my little pop with the TNA back in the teens. Yeah, but I mean, that's too well. Me and Matt over there, a lot of good guys. Very happy for me.
On the flip side, when it comes to good TNA storytelling and continuity, which I always appreciate, when you had your neck surgery, you got taken out by the British invasion.
Yeah.
And here you are with Matt Morgan going up and beating them for the tag team titles, so I thought that was pretty cool for them to follow up on that.
Oh, I actually remember that. I really think part of that reason why that continuity went well was because they made sure it went well because there wasn't any aura or any stink that they thought Jim Cornette had completely gone.
Here you got Nick Aldis, Rob Terry, and Doug Williams. What was it like working with those guys?
Those guys were good. I mean, Big Rob is people think he's not very good, but I mean, he's a lot better than people give him credit for. You know, just his physique alone is just monstrous. You know, so yeah, he was very athletic, surprisingly, very, very athletic. Doug's a veteran of England and Japan, so it was easy. Matt and Nick Aldis at the time, very, very young, awesome guy who could listen and could adapt to any style. It was, they booked their team up a lot earlier than they should have.
Well, you guys are the tag team champions, and then they had Matt Morgan turn on you. Was that done so you could take time off to recover for your neck? Because you said you came back early from it.
Yeah, they had me do that. That's when I went to Mexico in 2010. They had Matt do an injury angle, a surgery with Bruce Basin. It's supposed to be gone 9 months. And that was the reason to get me off TV, which was not the reason. You know, the reason was I was supposed to be living in Mexico City, wrestling for AAA and wrestling for TNA TV tapings, which I did maybe two or three. Another one of those, when your boss tells you something and something else happens. Yeah, that was that time too.
So it's kind of like a double shot then.
They put the thing on Matt, so he's a dual tag champion. And then they had me living in Mexico. I was supposed to, I probably came back in that 9 months. I probably did about three TV tapings in 9 months, which was definitely not the deal. I mean, I have a family, a nice house in Houston, Texas at the time. And here you have me living in a dorm room in Mexico, which was a lot different. It was more like a college kid trying to live in a dorm with roommates and stuff. So, I mean, you work your way up to make money and to get some status, have a nice house, nice things, and you are promised certain things, and it doesn't turn out. So, yes, I was extremely bitter that whole year.
They had you come back to finish that feud with Morgan, and it ended up with you beating him in the steel cage match at Victory Road 2010. I guess that was something.
Yeah, it was something. It was booked wrong. The match itself was not very good because certain elements that they wanted the match that I did in Mexico and stuff like that just weren't agreed upon to the other people in the ring. I just splashed up the truss on top of a steel cage in Mexico City at the time, and they wanted me to reenact that at TNA. And the other party in the match refused to take it, so we had to work around that. I think TNA dropped the ball on. They let a lot of guys get away with things. And when they were trying to do things and it didn't work out, and you wonder why, it's because obviously someone sabotaged it or didn't feel their it was going to hurt their push or something like that. And you see guys in TNA, they get to a certain status or a certain level, and then all of a sudden you see them get knocked down. Like Joe, how many times was Joe over and he kept getting knocked down? Because obviously there's someone, whether it's the guys in the ring with him or the guys in the owner's ear, try to make sure he didn't get his chest due and his time to shine. But then that's what happened to myself on certain occasions. That's probably happened with, I'm not being a baby about it, but it happened with probably a lot of people. I've seen it happen to Asian styles. I mean, why can it happen to me? So it's just one of those things, because you go to Mexico and live in a non-heated, non-AC house, where you just get a fan, and you're doing this for your TNA career, and you get in the ring, and there's a guy who don't want to do nothing that's supposed to help you get over. So it's very awkward.
There's a lot of criticism from fans when Hogan and Bischoff came to TNA. What was your experience working with those guys?
Hulk Hogan was cool. He was awesome. He was answering questions. When I came back from Mexico, he actually introduced me back to the ring, which was pretty cool. I never got a good read on Eric Bischoff. He was always straight business, always seemed to be too busy to talk. And I remember he was trying to figure out the roster, the AJ Styles and the Bobby Roode and myself, all the singles guys, and they're trying to push. It was Samoa Joe's. The only thing I can remember about that time, specifically mentioned towards myself, was I never forget that Dixie wanted me to get pushed. A lot of the younger TNA guys get singles pushes, and Ed Bischoff came up to me and looked me right in my face and asked me, was I at least 6 foot?
How's Dixie Carter as a boss?
She's great. She knew she didn't know the ins and outs of wrestling, so what she did, what I thought was best, and that was putting people, the general managers, the talent relation guys, the people she thought should be in charge. I think the main reason if Dix gets any bad credit is just because simply is that she puts the wrong people in charge. You can't fault that, because I mean, the company was making money in 06, 07, 08, and 09. So I mean, obviously something's working. And then you bet the farm with Hogan and Bischoff, and all of a sudden, you're wondering where your profits went. I think they would have kept on course how they were from 2006 to 2009. I don't think they would still be around.
Ric Flair got you into the business. What was it like finally meeting him?
Oh my God. Ric Flair is the man. I'll never forget one time we had a house show and Ric Flair was there. I think it was Mexican America versus ODB and someone else. I forgot. But Rick saw the crowd and his left. He left the whole building. He said, I'll be at the Marriott Hotel at the bar. And whatever West Virginia town was at. So we wrestled and we showed up in the town. And we're not staying at the Marriott, but he is. So we go to eat dinner there, and there's Ric Flair at the bar with Reed. And it was, the place was packed because there's Ric Flair in West Virginia. And then all of a sudden, Rick goes up, hey, Hernandez, be over here. You know, needs flyover spot. So sitting next to Ric Flair, and he's asking me stuff about Mexico and stuff like that. And I'm trying to be nice. I said, hey, I'll go to a fucking legend and go, Rick, can I buy you a drink? Anything you want, sir, out of respect, can I buy you a drink, sir? And he goes, son, when you buy a Ric Flair a drink, you buy the whole bar a drink. And I'm like, Rick, there's like 150, 200 people here. He goes, if you buy a Ric Flair a drink, you buy the whole bar a drink. And I go, Rick, I don't make what you make, brother. I'm sorry. I cannot buy you a drink. And that was the biggest shutdown of my career. I'm trying to pay tribute to the man who helped you get the bill, just buys you in the business, and you can't buy him a drink because he wants you to buy the whole bar a drink than what he does.
What's your favorite Ric Flair match?
Ric Flair is just any match. I mean, I would watch Rick do wrestle him. Except when his last run, WWE, I didn't like that. But, I mean, any of the WCW stuff was awesome. You know it's the same cell spots, it's the same moves, and the same moveset, but he draws you in no matter what. Makes you want to see what he's going to do next, even if you didn't know what's going to happen next.
When he came back from Mexico, they had you paired up with... I can't even say this. Anarquia.
And Anarquia.
Anarquia, yes, thank you. I felt like when you guys started the Mexican America, it just felt like another version of LAX.
Who you tell? I was there. I lived it. This was when I got disillusioned with TNA at the time, because, I mean, here I am. I got two kids at the time. I leave my kids in Houston, Texas. I live in Mexico for 9 months with the promise that I'm going to come back for a singles push. You didn't want Homicide around. You didn't like his look and whatever was going on when Bischoff was in charge. Fine, cool. So you put me in trunks and all this. I come back, and I'm in a worse group than when I left. I'm in a third-rate version of LAX. I was groomed to be a singles guy. I come back, I'm back in the tag division. You asked me to bring back a partner from Mexico. I said, okay, fine, I'll do that. And I figured the singles push and work, hey, at least I can wrestle with someone that I want to wrestle with. and we can have a, you know, we can have a really good strong tag, and maybe we can rekindle some things like our exit. And when I came back, the guy that I chose, and they got all the paperwork and visa stuff for, they decided not to use him. So the Anarchia guy came from, it was this, you know, he's a cool dude. He just happened to be a random guy that was the Al Snow train from OVW. So you have to imagine my dismay. Some guy that I just met, and you're trying to sell me him 10 minutes before we're supposed to have a match.
So basically, there was no chemistry with him?
He was trained more like a WWE style, punch and kick brawler style. And you know, TNA at the time, there was this, that's not happening for the tag division. Those guys, you know, the machine guns and guys like that, they're phenomenal. They're not, that crowd was so anime, and they're not going to put up with some guy who's doing punches and kicks and talking on a mic. So we were doomed to start. Very disillusion. I didn't want to be there at all.
How'd you feel about Rosita and Sarita being your valets?
That was the best part of the group. Because, I mean, you know, the people wanted to see those two. You put them as a heel tag. And then also you decided that I don't sound Hispanic enough to do the promos. So then you take the mic, well, away from me and give it to him and make him do the knockoff Chavo Guerrero. Well, who the fuck wants to see that? Like he just gets Chavo himself. It was very mind-boggling.
Sounds like it was done as a cost-cutting feature.
Well, I don't think so, because, I mean, they were bringing it. Brother, they were bringing in Serena from Mexico City as soon as this ballet. How do you have the, one of the best wrestling women in the world at the time, and you look like her being a ballet? And you're flying from Mexico City.
After Anakura left, you feuded with Devon Dudley. How was that?
Devon's awesome. He's an awesome guy. He's a legend. Anything about Devon Dudley is awesome to me. He's a great guy. Great worker, very underrated mic guy. I'm very, very happy for him. He got, you know, he got a nice little role in WWE. He deserves everything he gets. He's an awesome dude. You know, his head's all growing up now, getting big, and now he's got the second generation of 3D coming around.
Whose idea was it to pair you up with Chavo?
Dixie. I mean, which is, you know, mind-boggling, because here you wasted, what, a year of time, and you could, no disrespect to Eric here, Magnuson, he was put in that position, and any guy would have taken that spot, with that was given to him. But he was asked to do something that basically has to be Chavo, without being Chavo. So, I mean, I guess when Chavo finally got quit or got fired from WWE, I don't remember, but I knew as soon as he came that I was going to be a tag partner. Even though they said no, no, no. You guys both go to singles, which I didn't believe. And sure enough, the second week he's there, I'm tagging with him.
It wasn't Homicide, but I really did enjoy your run with Chavo. I felt like you guys had good chemistry together.
Chavo's also been coming WWE style, which is more character and less is more, and selling, and it was a great time. I had nothing bad to say about my time on Chavo, except we didn't get to be heels. That's the only thing I wish we could have got a chance to do.
And I felt like even though you had another tag team partner, you and Chavo were able to still have a strong run with the tag team division. You had Daniels and Kazarian, Austin Aries and Robert Roode, Gunner and James Storm.
Austin and Roode, they were great together. I remember we wrestled them in England. It was rough, because the England crowd, we're supposed to be the big-time baby faces, and they just, as soon as they played our music, they just booed us out of the building. So I just knew it was going to be a rough match, crowd-wise. Those guys were super cool heels. You can't beat that, especially the England crowd.
And then you guys had a good run there. You won the tag team titles until you lost it to Gunnar and James Storm. And then they let go of Chavo Guerrero. Did you find out the reason behind that?
Nope. After that, after he got the piece of pie thing, I sat home for 6 months paid because they didn't know what to do. From December to May, I had no contact with TNA. But I'm on their payroll. Every month, get the same check. So, I mean, what can you do?
And then that's when they let you go in 2014?
Oh, it was the funniest thing ever. You know, I was mad because, I mean, all the untruths that were told to me from, like, 2010 on. So when they trouble go, they didn't say anything to me. This kid, I mean, literally nothing. You know, because you get an email. And you're booked for the TV tapings or this, or you're not booked for them. And that's the only thing I would get from them is I was not booked for the TV tapings. For 6 months, I was so mad I didn't care if I heard from them again. And then the day my contract ended, I thought it ended maybe 3 or 4 days before it ended, and it actually ended up sooner. And as soon as the day it expired, I was okay, unfollowing me on Twitter and not even telling me. It was very, very childish.
It's gotta be awkward having your contract not renewed without them telling you that your contract's not gonna be renewed.
There was absolutely no communication. None. I was like in shock. And then sure enough, we were talking about earlier before the interview started about the legal problem I had with TNA and Lucha Underground 2015. How ironic, here they are. I don't get my contract renewed or fired, however you want to say it. Because no one told me anything. I just realized that what was going on because I got unfollowed on Twitter by Impact. That they called me back 2015, my buddy, a year later, to wrestle for them and for more money. That was very, very awkward.
Do you feel like somebody in the office had a grudge against you?
Oh, of course. There's some sabotage, but I mean, I'm from the generation where you're an athlete that best has to be placed. You know, I've been on TV off and on for the last 15 years, so if this promotion isn't like me, there's five others that will.
How'd you enjoy your experience in Lucha Underground?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, this was like a B-movie with wrestling. Or like a music video from, you know, the 80s with MTV and stuff. It was very groundbreaking. It launched so many careers. I mean, look, it's a who's who on now. On WWE, Ring of Honor, New Japan, what you name it. Those guys came from Lucha Underground. Pretty much cast them so that nobody wanted. And now they're, you know, major stars.
I think the highlight for me was you getting to work with Alberto Del Rio. I mean, he was a former world champion. Here you are working with him. I mean, that's pretty cool.
That was awesome. And it was really cool the way they did it. You know, it was Lucha style. We wasn't very rarely doing singles matches at the time. You're doing tags, six-mans, or eight-mans. Real, real Lucha. It was awesome. And the best thing about Lucha Underground, especially when I was there for season one, is that all the vignettes that you saw were done in English, but were also done in Spanish. So if you could speak Spanish, you got to broaden your horizons by doing all your verbiage in Spanish as well, because it was showing Una Mas. So that's why I really think that Lucha Underground took off, because not that many people get the L-Ray Network. But everyone, especially in the Southwest, we get Unimas, which is the sister station of Univision. It was on Saturday nights for free, where you're paying like $20 just to get the L.A. channel. And I think that's what was the rule. The key to Lucha Underground's success at the time was being on Unimas.
You made your return to TNA in 2015, but it was very short-lived for reasons we won't go into. How were you able to overcome that to come back a few years later?
It was weird. On the 2015 deal, which he said, the gallery I can't go into, but I mean, if you're a TNA fan, you miss some really cool matches, because I mean, I wrestled probably 7 out of 8 times that week. I mean, I had a very cool steel cage match with Bobby Lashley that will never be seen on TV, which sucks. I had some cool matches with myself and Loki tagging against the Wolves, Andy Awards and David Richards. There was some really cool matches that unfortunately will never get seen. But this was May of 2018, Sunday Death called me and asked me if I wanted to do a tag with Homicide against the New LAX. And of course, the Homicide, I'll do whatever. And that took probably about 2 weeks to figure out. So, I mean, just probably mid-May, it started. And then the June 2nd, we were on TV. It was definitely night and day, where Impact back then was very... They maybe weren't top-notch, but they tried to be. They tried to be as top-notch as possible, but now it looks like you're at a high school gymnasium. Even the catering was horrible. I mean, for the guys who've been in WWE, if you think TNA was a step down, the Impact the way it's run now is, well, they keep going down like 5 flights of stairs. It's that much lower. The matches might be a little bit better, because if you're an exhibition kind of stuff, but no, the accommodations, the locker room, the everything, well below what TNA was in the past.
When you got the call to come back, did you feel like you were getting worked because of the issues that happened before?
One thing I'd be able to tell a story, but I can't tell a story because I'm not getting sued no more. But I mean, when you go from signing back to the company and you have all these cool matches and everyone's happy, and all of a sudden you get hit with subpoenas and then everyone steps away from you and leaves you by yourself, of course you're going to be a little upset. You want me to come back to do this thing with the new LAX versus the old LAX, and for way less than what I was making ever in TNA. It was a bitter pill to swallow. But I was wrestling AAA at the time, and you want to wrestle America, and what better way else to get your name or rebuild your whole image back than coming back with your brother and Homicide. So, of course, we tried it. It was supposed to be a one-off. A lot of people don't realize that match, that whole little feud was supposed to be this one match. We were supposed to come in, do some vignettes in June, and then do that Slammiversary match in July, and that was supposed to be the end of it. But we tore the house down, and they realized they have some more. We have more to offer than they probably did, which was a little bit discouraging. You saw what happened. You see me wrestling it on the underground, and you see Homicide still wrestling, but you don't think we still have it together, which is awkward. I'm going to wrestle the underground. I'm going to wrestle AAA, where you're stealing a lot of their talent, but you're not sure if you want to use nothing more than just one match. And then when we had the same version match, and everyone was in all cylinders, we had a good match. That's when they turned it into like a 4-month feud.
How was it working with Homicide again?
And nothing changed. I've wrestled with Homicide. He got let go in TNA, 2010? And we've wrestled together probably 20, 30 times in between 2010 and 2018. And it's like, we don't call nothing in the ring, we just know each other's body language on what to do. It's literally like being in the ring with your brother.
It's incredible that you guys can continue where you left off with such ease.
Oh, it's phenomenal. I mean, is when did it ever happen where you can, you know, I probably wrestle with him, what, 3 or 4 times a year, every year from 2010, 2018, and we still have the same chemistry we had when we were wrestling full-time TNA schedule with house shows. I mean, it was the exact same. I mean, this, people really, really don't realize how great of a wrestler and what a great wrestling mind Homicide has.
You've known Hernandez for so long, he's pretty much your brother from another mother.
There is Homicide from Hernandez. Yeah, when we go back, I mean, it's like, he knows what I'm thinking, I know what he's thinking. You know, the prime example, we go back to Impact in June of last year, and we're sitting in the stands, and we're watching, there's guys in the ring going over their matches and stuff, and we both looked at each other, and we knew exactly what we were thinking, that we were stuck in wrestling hell. And guys like Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Robert Roode, Eric Young, they went to wrestling heaven to make good money, and we're stuck in Windsor, Ontario, in Impact. I mean, it was weird. We both thought the exact same thing at the exact same moment.
When you and Homicide came back to fight Ortiz and Santana, who were the new LAX, that just didn't sit right with me because you guys spent so many years establishing that name.
It was awkward for us when we first came back and we jumped Ortiz and Santana. If you watch that vignette where in the in-ring where Conan and Eddie are arguing on the mic, and then all of a sudden me and Homicide come and jump the kids, and then all of a sudden Eddie gets on the mic, go back and look at it if you think I'm lying. Go back and look at it when we first came back. If Eddie didn't shut that crowd up, there's no way that we could not be the baby faces. Because those people wanted to see us back. Everyone, Santana, Ortiz are great guys, great wrestlers. But LAX, you think of LAX, think of myself and Homicide and Conan. Anybody else, any other configuration, it's just like someone pretending to be LAX. Eddie Kingston versus Conan, we jump him. And as we jump him, laid him out, and Eddie gets on the mic and starts establishing us as the OGs, there's a chance for us right there where Eddie had to stop his promo and cut them off because he's going off on our stats, you know, 7-time tag champions, this, and this, and the people are rising like they want to see this. If he wouldn't have cut him right there, we'd have to be the baby faces for that whole feud. We do exactly what you need us to do, try to get the kids over as LAX. Because as great as the talent those kids are, no one believes that's LAX. Any hardcore fan asks who LAX is. And I promise you that not the answer. They put those kids in a bad position because let them have their own name. Let them create their own destiny or whatever. But it's going to be revolving door because watch. Sooner or later, the Ortiz and Santana's going to be tired of being LAX, and all of a sudden they'll branch out on their own, and all of a sudden here comes another LAX. So it's going to be like I think it's going to be like a factory.
I can't believe you and Homicide are crazy enough to work that match at Bound for Glory without any padding whatsoever. I'm like, oh my goodness.
The weird thing about that match was there's no padding. So we come out first. Homicide gets in the ring and starts jumping around. And the middle board pops out the right off the back. So if you look at the match, the referee's trying to push the board back in the spot. It won't go back in the spot. I'm like, holy. Then LAX comes out with the Latin rap group. And all of a sudden, one board is sliding out of place. All of a sudden, there's like 5 boards. And the referee had to slide one of the boards out. We were scared.
You guys were literally in a unsafe working environment?
Most definitely. I mean, the very first interaction that I had with the new LAX, I get hit in the face with a trash can and I'm bleeding right from the top of my head. I mean, within seconds. And usually the New York Commission is so strict that they'll stop the match. And it went on, so it worked out, but still. Even though it may not have been the cleanest match, it might not have been the perfect spot fest, whatever you guys want to talk about, but just on pure workarounds, this board is slipping when I'm running on it, this board is going to fall. Watch out for this hole. I thought we did our job.
I was sitting there in the front row when you got cracked and you lost a lot of blood. You had me worried.
Well, I hate when I get hit the hard way on the head because you don't know how bad it is and you keep feeling it, it keeps stinging, but it was, I mean, it wouldn't stop. After the match, the EMTs gave me some super glue and I super glued my head up and I was good.
It's crazy how well that works. I met you after the pay-per-view, and had I not gone to the show, I wouldn't have known that you got busted open.
Oh, that, super glue when you're bald, and super glue is your best friend when you wrestle.
Are you still with TNA now, or was Bound for Glory your last stint?
Okay, that weekend we quit.
Oh, you quit?
Yes, we quit. After that match, they had us do a short feud with the Lucha Brothers, and then we just peaced out. Guys, listen to this, please do not always do stuff in writing, because I basically mean at least twice in my career in the last 4 years. You know, when I talked to Sanjay, he wants to come in for extreme discount pay. It was okay. We'll do that for 3 months, then we show you our work. We want to get paid right, and we want what we, you know, we want our due. And of course, he said yes. This, I guess, to get us to come back. You know, that was in June. So September is time to get, it's time for our spot. We did our end of the bargain. We all worked what's up. You have us losing every single match, but yet the people still want to see us and people are still popping for us. You know, obviously you have something here. So they came up to us and said, we can't give you the reins and we can't guarantee you, TV dates anymore. So it's okay. And we just had one more match with the Lucha Brothers and we left. Haven't talked to them since. This was what, October? Like the third week of October.
Oh wow, I had no idea. I thought you were still with them.
No, very, very bad business, brother. Very bad business, I mean.
You started with that company in 2003. You had a great career. You won championships. You hit your peak with Homicide. And for whatever reason, TNA just kept screwing you.
Oh my God, you're awesome, dude. Usually your career goes up, or at least somewhat up. But in 2006, I started off that year right off with the tag champions, merchandise, kings. I mean, every kid from a white, black, Hispanic kid, every kid in Orlando had an LAX t-shirt. So we're making money hand over fist every 3 months on merchandise sales for three years straight. And then you have people tinkering and trying to fix things in the company that affects your career and it affects Homicide's career. That means you're like, your career is going on three wheels now. One thing after the other, you get opportunity to wrestle with the company to help build this company back after all the bad things that happened for it. And you give them the thanks, but no thanks after the Bound for Glory match. We still got it. We still can do everything we did before. You've seen the matches. It's the same thing. You hit the nail on the head. Your career is supposed to go upward, not downward.
So looking back on your illustrious career, what would you say was your favorite singles match, your favorite tag team match in TNA?
Favorite singles matches, the time I got to wrestle Sting and the time I got to wrestle Kurt Angle, I thoroughly enjoyed both of them. I mean, being in there with legends, and they're dictating the crowd reaction just on what they want to do, and it was phenomenal. And can come in the ring with Beer Money. They were great. AJ Styles and Daniels were awesome. You know, even the Machine Guns, very underrated team. They were awesome, too. I enjoyed being in the ring with all those guys.
Now, besides Homicide, who else were you travel buddies with?
Well, you travel with your tag partner. That's what, you know, I've always did. I traveled on NLK. I traveled with Chavo all the time. In the short time I was with Matt, I even traveled with Matt. It was, you know, pretty much, you know, for myself, that's who I traveled with.
You got any good road stories?
Not that I can say in public, nope. I don't want to incriminate anyone on it. I mean, I can't think of anything that would not, especially, you gotta realize, Homicide is different. He's not just a character, that's the real deal. Probably the only story I can think off the top of my head that's PG and not that won't incriminate anyone is, we're driving to a house show in upstate New York, and we do the GPS, and of course, we get lost, and we wind up in Canada. And I'm trying to U-turn, so we want to go through the customs on this, and the guy is right there, one last U-turn, and I remember the fateful words, Sean, let me handle this. I won't let Homicide talk to Canadian customs, but I let him handle it. He proceeds to say, hey, we're wrestlers. You know, you know how y'all look pretty hard over here. We've been wrong term. We need to go. We just need to go back to the show. An hour and a half later, after they went to our car and detained us, we get to the show probably. I don't think we wrestled because we got to show that late. They over-searched the car and over-searched our background to see if they could find things to put us in jail.
Canada's pretty strict.
That day was pretty bad.
What about ribs? Do you have a favorite rib story that got pulled on you or that you pulled on somebody?
Unfortunately, back then, people won't believe it or B, will find it offensive and stuff like that, so I would rather not say the rib stories. But yes, there were plenty of ribs, especially after when we were just tagging together and we didn't have a manager or something. You know, TNA was just using us to have good matches, no storylines, or no mic time. So everyone was doing vignettes and stuff like that, so we had the whole day pretty much to screw around, so yeah, there was nothing but ribs back then from like 2007 to 2009, 2 years straight. There was plenty of agents and plenty of enhancement talent that did not like me on Homicide, just on the ribs alone.
So what keeps you busy now?
My kids. Yeah, oh my God. I just got married last year, and I have three kids, and my wife has three kids, so we have like a little Mexican Brady Bunch here in San Antonio, Texas.
Nice. Where can fans follow you on social media?
Social media, on Twitter, it's at SupermexCTM, and I just started on Facebook like a year or two ago. I don't know how you find, but I guess this Sean Hernandez on that. And, you know, me and Homicide are still wrestling. We are doing a show. We're doing a show on July 5th together. We did a show in Hawaii, which was awesome. That's, you know, who gets to wrestle in Hawaii, right?
Right.
And, July 14th, Homicide has this big tribute to Homicide show in Brooklyn, New York. So that's going to be a really big deal. And we're doing some things. We're going to get some things together. You know, Homicide, take some time off to heal up after the last run with Impact. So it's about time to make some, a little bit more noise before we hang it up, you know.
Well, I appreciate you taking your time to me to pretty much cover your whole career. That's pretty cool.
And I probably, especially when you gave me the reality check for how my career went downhill every year.
Seemed like one giant rib, didn't it?
Oh, it was. But such a big facade, because you're over here, you know, you're not realizing what's going on, and now you're realizing how much you're getting paid. So, when you're getting paid well, it's awesome. But you realize 10 years later, oh man, look, I got screwed here, but guess what?
How do you want fans to remember you?
However they want. I mean, it's obviously their opinion, but I mean, I try to give them the both. I always wanted to represent Hispanic people. I wanted to represent Hispanic the culture all the time. Try to give something back like the guys before me and hopefully the guys after me.
Thanks again for being on my show. I'll keep in touch.
Awesome, bro. Thanks for having me back.
Segregación. El tiempo ahora está para que los latinos hagan cuál correcto para la mente, cuál correcto para el corazón y cuál correcto para la raza.
LEX.